So what is the weather forecast in Miami today?
Hot and hotter.
Hot and hotter.
Well, that works.
But we were hot and then colder.
Throw in a little humid.
Yeah, a little humidity.
Well, so I was actually in Orlando last week, and I mean, it was perfect. It was, I think the highs were, I don't know, 76 to 82-ish. But the humidity, unlike the summertime, like, was almost non-existent. It was super low. And just a gentle breeze. It felt great.
And you decided to come back?
Well, yeah. Got to work. Got to pay for it.
Oh, there's about that.
Yeah. And had to return kids to school.
Okay.
Yeah. They would have gladly stayed, but yeah, such is life. So why, you're originally from Miami, but obviously spent time in Indy. Here's a question for on our cold open. Was there any aspect to Indiana's different seasons? And I know you've spent time in other cities as well in the north that you actually enjoyed, or you're like, okay, I can't wait to get back to South Florida.
Yes. I mean, I really miss the seasons. It's beautiful in Indianapolis and out in the outskirts as well. So I spent a lot of time in the city center and then beyond. And I really miss the seasons. It's so pretty. Like when you actually remember what spring is and what fall is, it's not just a version of hot and hotter and then a bit more muggy. Yeah. So I really enjoyed that. And there's just, I feel like there's a lot of opportunity too to spend really good quality time with the people you care about outside. No matter what you're interested in, there's always, like, I feel like there's always a walk or somewhere you can hang out outside and have that indoor-outdoor experience, minus the winter, which I have lived in colder places, surprisingly. Yep. Although I think like any time, we had the coldest winter on record.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. Always.
One of those years, and I remember sitting in my car and my thermostat in my car, I think, was negative something. And there was, you know, and of course, we were the ones, or I was the one, outside in front of the camera saying, don't spend more than 15 minutes outside today. And I'd probably been outside for like 24 hours. So you know, those moments were a bit shocking, but I think they're well worth it when you get to kind of hang out at home and relax with your other, you know, friends and family, and then be able to enjoy, you know, everything that happens with the rest of the seasons. So that's something special. Plus all the great events. I mean, you can't hate on that. I had the Super Bowl when I was in town too, which is fantastic. Yeah, right. The Indy 500. I mean, you can't say enough. And everything that the city does around these events, I think sometimes in some of the bigger cities, you don't get to really have like the larger exploration of, you know, what the Indy 500 means historically and how it can be fun. And I'm just an event for everyone. So, yes. Yes, yes, yes. I miss that weather. I do.
So let me ask you this then. You're a Miami native. You're back there now. What is one thing about Miami that the typical maybe Midwestern visitor doesn't know? Because they probably all think, oh, South Beach. But obviously, there's a lot more to Miami than just South Beach. What might that thing be that you, as a native, would say, oh, forget the stuff that you think about, but here's a piece of Miami that you need to check out?
Yes. Yes, we do get a lot of people who live on South Beach, even, who forget that there's something south, which is basically all of Miami, where South Beach is located is far north. And they do forget that. I think that there are a lot of pocket tropical parks and some that are even a little bit bigger than that. For example, Fairchild Tropical Gardens is the most beautiful gardens that I have seen. And you can walk around and enjoy nature and really understand and honor the different plants and wildlife there. Yeah. And it's quiet. So, and something for the whole family, which is nice too. So that's definitely one of those destinations. And there are a few of them where you can really soak in the tropical environment that I don't think you get in other, well, you don't get in a lot of other places unless you're outside of the United States. So that's a favorite.
All right. Makes sense.
Yeah.
Noted.
That's cool.
This weekend.
We'll just pop down there. Yeah.
There you go.
Quick trip.
I'll send you the direction.
Perfect. We'll hop in the car.
Is this thing on? All right, hey Hey guys, welcome back to another episode of the Summits Podcast. Thank you all for joining us from wherever you get your podcasts, or if you're joining us on the Heroes Foundation YouTube channel, thank you for doing so. Today, we have a long lost, I would almost say Hoosier native, but you're not a Hoosier native, but temporary Hoosier, but back in South Florida, sunny South Florida, that is, Miss Ann Keel. Now, I should say it's Ann Keel Ducks now. It was Ann Keel when you're here in Indy. Welcome to the Summits Podcast, Ann.
Thank you so much. I'm honored to be here. And you're saying Indy, and I miss it. I'm feeling the vibes already. So I know this is going to be a great conversation.
Awesome. Well, thank you for joining us. Like I said, yeah. I did a brief intro there, but why don't you introduce yourself to all our listeners and viewers and kind of give us a little more background?
Well, of course, I have to start with Indy. I worked at WXIN, Fox 59, from 2011 to 2014. And I had a wonderful time getting to know so many people in the community and so many just nice, nice people. And I've lived all over the country, and I can tell you the nicest people live in Indianapolis and parts of Indiana as well that I visited. So thank you for that. The kindness is something that I take with me always. Currently, I am a strategic communications consultant. So originally, I was on camera as a television news reporter. I was performing that task for over a decade. I lived in several other cities as well, doing what I did in Indy. And I just made a shift, and I'm sure we can dig into that a bit later. But I made a shift, and now I get to enjoy not having to do my hair and makeup every day. I'm away from the camera, and I teach other people how to speak to the media, to speak in public in front of groups. And it's really fantastic. I think it's all about raising people's authentic voice, sharing their expertise in a way where they can become thought leaders and people can hear important information that may actually impact their lives in a big way or even in a small way. So that's the gift that I feel like I can keep giving as a storyteller, just behind the scenes in my pajamas when I can sometimes.
Yeah, nice. I totally get the hair piece that
yeah,
that
resonates well with
you. You understand.
Yeah,
you understand. Totally. You're on camera. Right. You get it. You see.
It's the reason why I don't want to go to Miami, because all the humidity just messes with everything.
Yeah, it gets bigger. It gets bigger.
Oh, yes. Oh, wait. Hold on. Vince may be moving now.
So a little bio for our folks. So you have a journalism degree from Boston University. Question there. What led you to Boston from Miami? Because we talked about winters, and Boston's definitely colder than Indy.
Yeah.
Yeah. See, I didn't know what winter was then. I had been to Colorado on spring break, and I thought, oh, this is snow. No.
Yeah.
Yes. I had no idea. Based on what I wanted to study, which is broadcast journalism and politics, I wanted a major city. I also loved this idea of being, you know, a number in a city of strangers. I love that idea because Miami is not a walkable city. Necessarily. In neighborhoods, it can be, but certainly in a larger city, it doesn't have the public transportation Boston and DC have. And so I really thought it'd be a fantastic experience in that way. It's extremely international. So that's fantastic. So I looked at the schools that had what I wanted to learn, and I pushed the button, and then I really experienced winter. And, you know, you learn a few things. My wardrobe expanded heavily. And all I remember is layers, 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 because then you go inside and then it's extremely hot. Yep. And you're like, oh, wait, what do I do? Because initially I just got the warmest jacket I could imagine. I'm like, wait, now what do I do?
Mm-hmm, right. Yep.
So, yes, I survived Boston, but it is a fantastic city. And they're not as nice as Indy, though. I will say I love Boston. It has special things, but Indiana wins for kindness factor. Yep,
perfect. Now, when you went and got your bachelor's and then ultimately your master's in journalism and public affairs as well from American University, what was your intention or your thought always to get on TV? Or did that just kind of happen as you went through the process?
Yes, they were talking about this thing called convergence back then, because at the time, and I feel like I'm dating myself now, but at the time, you were either a print journalist or you were a television journalist or you were a radio journalist. And they were starting to talk to us about, hey, things are happening in the world in terms of the internet and what people want to see and meeting your audience where they are. And then you start to realize that you actually need to be trained and educated and upskilled in all the different formats. And you saw that video, and look what's happening today. Video is not the future. Video is now. People want to meet you and and understand what's happening and what your face looks like as you're communicating with them. It's more authentic. And so I had an inkling that was going to happen. And I also love photography and video. It was always a hobby of mine when I was very young. So it really, I put all the things together, the civic duty, the storytelling, the communications, the writing mixed with my interest in some of the video formats. So it all fell together then. And it was fun. You know, it's a new experience every single day, not an office job. The closest thing to the office I had was an SUV that probably shouldn't have been on the road anymore in many of the cities I worked in. You know, it was lacking in the heat or the AC, depending on the city. But it was an adventure, and you do it because, at least for me, I did it because I knew I was telling stories that matter, that may help one person decide something for themselves or their family or their community. That puts them in a better spot. And that in itself, that one person is who I always had in the back of my head in terms of those days that were more difficult than others and felt a bit sacrificial. But that one person that I thought about was always, they'd pop their head in and tell me a story.
Yeah. Awesome.
Yeah.
So you spent, like you said, 2011 to 2014 in Indy. Did you go back to Miami from Indy, or did you have another stop after the Indy?
Yes, I made another stop. I was in Orlando for a little while as well. And then I said, I'm in Florida and my family's still in South Florida and the beaches are in South Florida that I love. And the fishing is in South Florida where I love. And I said, you know what? If I'm going to be in Florida, I need to be in Miami. So I originally hadn't even planned on it. The way that television news works is you look at the next groupings of cities that are larger audience, you know, you move your way up that way. And so I kind of landed here by accident. and it was a gift, right? It was a gift because I now spend so much time and have spent so much time with family and friends. And it's nice to be a native in a city you live in. You remember those little spots, so those pocket spots that make things more special. But I don't think I could be back here and the person I am without having lived in the different cities that I lived in. Because each one teaches you something new. And sometimes it's good to be a stranger in a new city. You find out things about yourself and what kind of impact you want to have when you're uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. And I think uncomfortable is good. I think sometimes we get scared of it, but uncomfortable is good.
Yeah. Well said. Yeah. There's a lot of people that say you got to get yourself uncomfortable from time to time, for sure.
Yep.
Yes. Yes.
You know, the basis of this podcast, an extension of the Heroes Foundation and talking about people's cancer stories. And what is your cancer story?
Well, you're going to get me started now.
Yeah. Diving into it.
We're diving deep dive. So as I mentioned earlier, I was actually working at WSVN here in Miami as a television news reporter. And I was diagnosed with cancer then. Apparently had it for 3 years. It was a slow moving cancer, head and neck cancer, actually, in my parotid gland. And people are like, what's your parotid gland? I didn't know about a parotid gland either. It's one of those things in our bodies that just do what they're supposed to do, typically.
Yeah.
It's your largest salivary gland. So it's behind your jawline, underneath your facial nerve, right across from your ear in this area here. Okay. And I received a diagnosis while I was a television news reporter working around the clock. I mean, I didn't even realize that I was at one point seeing an oncologist because I'd gone to so many doctors for so long who had misdiagnosed me. And then so many doctors where I felt like, okay, this is a great place to be where I am now. And that was the University of Miami Health System. But I didn't even realize I entered that one tunnel that one time and then went into this new building and then I was in the cancer center. It was a strange thing. You know, sometimes we're moving so fast in life where we're trying to get answers for ourselves and take care of ourselves, but you don't even look up at the signs anymore. You're moving so fast. And I received my diagnosis 5 weeks before I was scheduled to get married. So I know we talk about bad timing or there's no right timing, but it certainly goes into the category of terrible timing. I think I was at this point in my life where I was obviously working very hard. My career had always been a priority for me for quite some time. And I felt like finally I was at that point where I could have that full circle, the whole pizza, where I had that personal life too. I found a life partner. And all of a sudden, on the eve of becoming husband and wife, I got this news, and you guys are going to make me cry already. And it's the kind of news where you think that, is this it? Is this like the bow out? Is this, you know, what happens next? Because we go through every day like, oh, what are we doing on Thursday? Oh, yeah, next month we'll schedule this. But then all of a sudden, when you get that kind of news, the whole world freezes. And it's interesting because I remember sitting in the doctor's office and, you know, you always feel so vulnerable. It feels, no matter where you are, it feels sterile. The smells, everything. And I remember this nurse walking across and handing me a tissue box. And it was out of a movie in a way where things are operating around you almost. And you're just sitting there. It was almost like a cinematic effect. And I remember the first thing I said was, we were planning to have a baby. And it's so strange because I really had never said that before. Like, I think that was the obvious next step. I never talked about babies as being a big part of my life, but finally I had this person and it just made sense. And it was the first time I'd said it out loud. And then I realized that it's maybe a reality I'll never have. And that was really, really difficult. But I think even more difficult was probably telling my husband, because sometimes you get strong, right? You realize, okay, I'm gonna beat this. I'm gonna figure this out. I'm gonna take the steps. I'm gonna listen to the experts. But then telling the people that you love, through the process that day and every day after that, talking to them about cancer was the hardest part, more than the surgeries, more than the pain. And I don't know if that's a shared feeling for other people, but it's difficult when you're in a place where you don't know what's next and you care so much about these people in your life. And this husband, or soon to be husband, hopefully, that still wanted to marry me. But having that conversation basically says, in sickness, we are going to walk down the aisle. Mm-hmm. And that's a lot. That's a lot. And I had cancer in my face and I walked down the aisle in the white dress. And we told, you know, some of the people, because I felt like this is a lot to hold on for myself. Oh. But what better way to celebrate life than to have a wedding with all of your favorite people from all over the country and all over the world in one place? And so for me, it was like, if this is my exit, I'm going to do this right. Yeah. To tell some people, and I got married on a Friday and I had cancer surgery on Tuesday. And it was a big, big weekend for sure. Yeah. And cancer free today. So I made it past my my 5 years and I celebrate that every single day. Yeah. And yeah, it's a gift.
Well, first of all, congratulations. That's awesome.
Yep.
Welcome to the club none of us ever wanted to be in.
No.
Well, I have to go back and ask. I'm not sure I've met anyone at this point who's had the same type of cancer. If they have, I've forgotten, unfortunately. But what were some of the signs and symptoms that ultimately led to going to see the doctor and say, hey, something's not right here?
Yes. So my cancer also is rare. It's called a sinic cell carcinoma, and it's in my parotid gland. For 3 years, and this is why I mentioned the whole 3 years thing and making sure you're always advocating for yourself, because sometimes I've been at doctor's offices and I'm, please raise your hand if you've been there too, even if you're alone watching this. And you go in and they say, oh, you know, I don't think anything's wrong with you. Or like they make you do a big scan and they're like, nope, you don't have this. And then you're left with nothing and you feel like you're crazy. But you have to keep advocating for yourself because it could be nothing, but it could be something. And so for me, my first symptom was I had hollowness in my left ear. So imagine when you're on an airplane and then your ear goes out and you're like, oh, this is terrible. It's making me crazy. You know, it's just kind of the airplane noise. I had that for 3 years, and it was difficult for me because it would go in and out. I think the humidity and the weather definitely made it worse certain times. But I remember I was a television news reporter, so I had my earpiece in one ear, and I was listening to my producer. And then I had this ear out where I had to listen around me, and I covered a lot of crime. There were helicopters above me. There were police sirens. I mean, literally every loud noise you can imagine, that was my everyday life. And I started to feel... And I know everyone, this is one thing I know everyone's experienced where it's like there's just a lot of noise around you and you're trying to separate foreground and background noise. Mm-hmm. And it's just a bit confusing. And it was bothering me. And of course, number one thing in my life was my job. And I was like, this can't get in my way. I need to see these doctors and figure out, you know, what's going on with my ear. And so I thought it was my ear. So I made my way from ENTs to rheumatologists and obviously in the end, oncologist, but I did see a few ENTs that, you know, had all these ideas about what it could be. And then when their idea wasn't it, And some of them was brain tumor. Oh, we just need to put tubes in your ears like kids and all these different ideas. When that was it, that was the end of the chapter. And I didn't have to move on and try and see if there's someone else. So the first doctor that I think really set me in the right direction was this gentleman. His name is Dr. Angeli at the University of Miami Health System. And he said, and he's an ENT. And he said, you know what? I actually don't know. I don't know what this is.
Yeah.
And it was the best thing that I'd ever heard. I was like, thank you. I don't either. But like, let's dig into this.
Yeah.
I don't either. And so that for me was the most important thing. And by that time, I'd had some almost like under my skin, I could feel almost like little grains. And then it became, those little grains became like, I felt like a little pebble almost. Yeah. Very, very small. But I could feel it along my jawline. And so that's when I was like, huh. And even then, people like, maybe that's a calcified lymph node. Maybe it's this. And yeah. So that's really having to have that second symptom was really important for me in terms of my medical process. But I still had to do the CT, the MRI, the ultrasound guided biopsy for them to even figure out like, wait a second, this is something. Because on some scans, it doesn't pick certain things up, like the difference in tissue and so on. It was difficult. It was difficult. And that's why I mentioned that. You know, when I first got my diagnosis, I didn't even realize where I was because I'd seen so many doctors trying to advocate for myself, running around in my life, trying to take care of myself and my family and my job. And you forget sometimes these little but very big things. And that is the health that we, that our health, our everyday, our bodies that we, you know, beat up a lot. So. So it's I say all this because I think the most important thing is advocating for yourself when it comes to your health, whether it's cancer or anything else, and trying to be that person for loved ones too.
Yeah. What was the treatment? So you had surgery for removal. Was there any additional treatment as well?
No. So I got, you know, I just feel like I got lucky after lucky. It ended up being a stage one cancer, which they found out through surgery. I had a sign off on them paralyzing my face on the left side. And because as I mentioned before, your parotid gland, your facial nerve actually like is on top of like right above your parotid gland. And they decided they needed to take it all out and remove lymph nodes. And luckily it hadn't spread. It hadn't spread to my lymph nodes or anywhere else. The doctor in the surgery, keep in mind, I was 34 at the time, said, you know what? Like I came out of surgery and I was like, okay, I'm not going to have this part of my face anymore. Is it going to be hard to drink? Am I going to be slobbering everywhere? Am I going to be tearing out of my eye? Like, how do I navigate that? And he decided during the surgery not to, cut my facial nerve. And the reason why, is, and I think where the concern obviously being is that, trying to really get all of it and then the extra, trying to have the margins that he wanted, he didn't really get those. So it was a decision he made where it was like, this is going to impact her more with paralysis and everything else for her life, for her age, for everything. And he made that decision and said, you know what, if anything, we're just going to have to do a lot of radiation and kind of figure it out. My type of cancer, you couldn't treat it with chemo, it's just radiation. So after my surgery and they, you know, the normal checks that you go through, I saw another doctor and he said, you know what, like, I rather not do radiation. Like, let's just sit this one out, and see, I apologize, and see where we can go and make sure that, you know, we're watching it closely, but at the same time, you know, there's no need to do it if we don't know 100% that we need to. So again, I got really lucky. And I feel really good about that. I apologize. I am also doing crisis management. So I get a few calls when I'm in the middle of something and I have only certain numbers that can call me. So I apologize for the phone call.
No worries.
I got lucky. I say it all the time. And, you know, just having the surgery was a gift, and, they filled my face with fat for my stomach. So, you know, I wish I got like that really good, like slim tummy afterwards, but all they did is just like take all of that they could find, all those cheeseburgers I'd been eating, and they shoved it in my face. And my surgery was 6 or 7 hours because part of it was obviously the removal of the cancer, but part of it was also reconstructive surgery. And the doctor that came in for that spent a lot of time on me, and she only treats at the time cancer patients and people with severe burns from fires. And she was a magician. I had a facial weakness for at least 6 months where my left side of my face was a bit dropped. And I'm probably dating myself again, but you remember those dolls back in the day where the eyes or the little eyelashes would just kind of flip off
and that's it.
I kind of was like that, where the rest of my face would do what it was supposed to do, but then this one eye would just stay open. So my husband and I, yes, he married me still. We would laugh and say, oh, the crazy eyes acting up again, you know? And I'm like, you have to laugh through this. Like, this is it. And I thought maybe I'm gonna have this crazy eye forever. And officially my crazy eye uncrazied. You know, you deal with that and you deal with trying to figure out what's going on with your face and the pain afterwards. I think when you have a cancer diagnosis, and this happened for me, and I did make it very public and I shared my thoughts and I wrote about it in a blog, and I was a public figure at the time too. You know, you get a lot of calls, you get a lot of people checking in on you. And I did for post-surgery too. It was very close to my diagnosis. My doctor had said survivability won't matter in 5 weeks for you, like that. It just won't. So get married first. But afterwards, 6 months later, you're a bit forgotten. And I think, and sometimes those are the hardest scans where you're like, okay, now I'm a normal person again. Now I'm physically feeling better. Now I'm back in my life as a changed person. Because I don't think anyone gets a cancer diagnosis and lives the next day the same way. But you don't always get that same kind of support. And that's difficult. And so having these conversations and knowing that there are other survivors out there, or people who have close family members or friends that are survivors, is so important to reconnect and engage and understand that this is a shared experience. And to your point, not one that we want to have, but one that we should really hone in on, because there's so much strength in authentic communication and these conversations and community. And it really drove my career from then on. I realized with TV news reporting, I ran into a lot of fires, literally. Mm-hmm. And I thought, if I have the second chance, and I got lucky with stage one and I got lucky with no radiation, that I couldn't run into another fire, at least for what? Yeah. And so I left TV news, which was always what I had done and always part of me. And I couldn't imagine doing anything else. And I think those types of decisions probably happen with some people too, where life does change in huge ways. Other people may just go right back to work and say, this is what I love and this is what I'm doing. And no, this is, I'm going to beat this. But I think that's a decision we all need to make and stop and think about what matters most to us.
Yeah. Two takeaways I have mm-hmm. from that. Number one, kudos to your docs for not just, obviously priority one, number one is let's fix this. Let's get this cancer out and let's correct things. But having the foresight to say, look, you know, we have a young person here. This nerve is a big deal. And mm-hmm. if we don't have to, let's not.
Yep.
I've heard other stories that are somewhat similar where docs have looked at, okay, well, what does this person do? Trying to take in the whole picture, not just the current situation, but also potential future and addressing that and trying to think about quality of life as well. So that's tough balance sometimes, I'm sure, but that's kudos to them for thinking about that and following through. The second thing, and you know, you can look, it's easier to look back on it now, but while the timing stunk in terms of right before your wedding, I know I say this personally, I'm glad that I had this situation where I was I was already married, but I was in a town that I had grown up in, had a lot of family and friends around. So you had that support network versus if I had been diagnosed, let's say out in Seattle where I didn't know anyone, that would have been tough. Or, you know, can you imagine if you'd been diagnosed maybe in Boston where you weren't born and raised, you weren't married, didn't have that many people around you that you really knew, things would have changed. And I think, you know, we're, I guess in a way thankful for, if we have to go through a situation like that, we did so in a way that we had a huge support network.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Community.
For
whoever,
sure.
Whoever your people are, through blood or friendship or work, having a community around you is critical. You know, it keeps you out of your head when possible. Because you are fighting a battle in your head, not just your body. And I think too, you feel like, at least for me, I felt like my body had failed me. You know, it wasn't protecting me, and it felt almost, it made me feel disconnected from myself. I almost feel like I had my brain and my mental part, and then I had the physical, and it started to separate in a way. And so having people around you who know you, whoever they are, is so important because they remind you of who you are, and they remind you that you, yes, you're changed, but you're still who you are at the core. And obviously in the everyday, the appointments back to back and a lot of treatments, and different things you have to go back and do, and the test and waiting on the test. So I think a community, a person, anything like that is critical. So yes, to your point, I think you are spot on. I couldn't have done it without my parents, my husband, and a lot of my friends, and even the community who reached out and said, you know what, this happened to me too, or I'm now concerned about this one thing, and I hadn't gone to the doctor, and now I'm going to go.
Yeah.
And I was, yes, 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 yes. Keep going. Keep knocking. Keep making those appointments.
Right.
You know?
And as you probably already know as well, that smell of the hospital is still hits you. Like I've been out for my first diagnosis 24 years. And yeah. If I walk in the hospital now and hit that, it still triggers some memories that aren't the greatest.
Yes, I know. And I mentioned the whole being uncomfortable thing, and I kind of like being uncomfortable. So I'll use that as a lead into, I completely agree. However, I ended up finding out after I left television news, I started running my own business as a communications consultant, doing some of the different work for experts and professionals and teaching them how to communicate better. And I heard about a job at Sylvester Comprehensive Cancer Center here in Miami, which is part of the University of Miami Health System. And that's where those doctors saved my life. And the job was exactly what I do and who I am. It was running all the communications and media relations for the cancer center, being involved with the marketing. So obviously I had recovered, this was 2018 initially when I was diagnosed. I said, yes, pick me. Like, what a gift to be in a space where I can tell other people about these amazing doctors. So that they go to the right person, or they ask the right questions of their doctor in their city. And what's special about this particular cancer center is it's not just doctors treating you. They're doing phase one clinical trials. They're doing the research. They're making the medicines with these different companies that they're then going to give you and treat you with. And it just is that full circle where you can get all of that. And it also, one thing that I was honed in on and focused on as a communications expert while I worked there was survivorship, being a survivor and what happens next. It's lonely sometimes. And I felt that. And the survivorship programs are so key, and they have them in cancer centers all across the country, probably to different levels. But we really were pushing that because it was like, while you're going through it, you become a survivor the day you're diagnosed. It's not just like, oh, after your chemo and after you're cleared. You're a survivor the day you're diagnosed. You're already on that path up, right? Changing that language. And so you can have music therapy and take classes, even during the pandemic, virtual music classes. You can do physical therapy. You can have the more generalized counseling, whatever you're into, art. And so there's a lot of programming that just reminds you to connect with yourself and a community, be creative, step outside your typical box. And those are the things that mend us. And so that survivorship programming, I think, is really important. And I certainly urge people who unfortunately may find themselves in these types of situations to seek out those types of programming, whether it's at their cancer center or in their community or another community, what you can do to connect and to find your people. And sometimes it's good to have people who aren't your family or friends who love you so much, but like, you know, haven't experienced it, or, you know, may not want to tell you the whole truth. So it's good to have people outside of it. It's like, oh yeah, you know, this happened to me back then. Like, oh yeah, me too.
Yeah.
So that's something special and something for people to think about. And I think it goes beyond cancer. We should have this programming and this type of opportunities offered at hospitals for so many people outside of cancer, because we forget how physically and how our connection between our physical and our mental self really are. We talk about being, oh, that's psychosomatic, and that has a negative tone. But I think we forget how our mind really affects our body and vice versa, and how interconnected we are. So we need to heal. If we can't heal our body ourselves because the doctors are doing that, let's try and heal our minds.
Yeah, well said.
Yeah.
That brought back some memories. So I was diagnosed in 2001. I'm quite a bit older than you are. At that time at IU, some of those services were kind of a pet project. They weren't a formalized program yet. Mm-hmm. And here we are in 2024. And I'm not going to say all, but the majority of cancer centers, I would think, across the U.S. have some version of those services to provide, because I think they've quickly found how valuable they are to the patients, yeah, and in some cases the caregivers and family members as well. So I'm glad that has morphed into what it is today and continues to improve. So thank you for mentioning that. You mentioned the word community, obviously very key. Share with us, if you would, what you've done aside from working at the Sylvester Comprehensive Cancer Center. But what else are you doing in the community there in Miami to kind of give back, if you will, and turn that emotion into action?
Yes. So there are, and a lot of the discovery I was able to do was working at the cancer center. And I worked there throughout the pandemic. And you start to learn about these different resources. Obviously, the survivorship programming that we mentioned before, but all these different community organizations. So that some are specific to different types of cancers. Others are really just for survivors and their caregivers and their families. One really great event, a large fundraiser that I've been participating in, is the Dolphins Challenge Cancer. So this particular event is a combination of a 5K and several bike rides up to 100 miles. And no, I haven't done the 100 miles yet, maybe in my future. And it's a big day. It's a big day for all the key stakeholders in Miami to come together. Obviously, from the name, you can understand Miami Dolphins are
who's that? In this. Yeah, never heard of them.
Yes, I don't know. Sorry, I know another team.
Up and coming team, you know.
Yeah. Yes, sorry. But it's the largest team-led NFL fundraiser in the country. And this can be, and I say this because it can be replicated in terms of what we can all do, even in one day, to come together and to be outside and be active and tell our stories. And you know, you can walk the 5K, you can ride the 100-mile ride, and
sound like an invitation.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
When is it?
If you're doing it, I'm doing it. Yeah. We just had it.
Okay.
We just had the event, and I say we because it becomes part of me. I'm no longer an employee, but it's a we, right? All of this is. I think we're in this together, and understanding that I think is critical. But it was something where we raise money as individuals and companies and corporations and give to the cancer research at Sylvester. So all of the money donated goes to the cancer research that hopefully will come up with real medicine, therapies, whatever it might be that just helps the next person. And we talked about quality of life before too. I think oftentimes we think of like life as just the biggest concern is the end of life, right? And that's daunting, but quality of life is also extremely important. Sometimes you get a cancer diagnosis and your only thing to think about is actually quality of life until, you know, we talk about terminal, until there is that day. And so I think as we, as survivors, as people in the medical community, as people in the outside community should understand is cancer sometimes feels like forever. It at least puts a stamp on your brain. And even if you're cured after a certain number of years and, you know, you see the numbers, but the reality is we really need to come together and to think about, you know, what we can do collectively to take care of ourselves and other people. And this is just one really impressive, beautiful day. And this can be done anywhere, in any city, at any size. And it's something special for sure. So if anyone wants to come down to Miami next year, come on down. Yeah. Let me know. DM me.
Yep. Okay. Yeah, there you go. Yeah. Send us the info. Maybe we'll
pop on down. Yeah.
Spring break.
I will. I just created a Miami vacation for you.
Exactly.
You can do good in the community, get your exercise, and then whatever else you want to do.
There you go. We'll be happy to buy you an adult beverage while we're down.
Oh, there we go.
Doing more research.
You're so nice. Yes.
Well, Anne, thank you very much for your time this morning.
Yeah, thank you
for sharing your story. We really appreciate it. And feel free to send some of that sunshine and warmth up here.
Yes, please.
It's now almost the end of March, mid-March. NCAA tournament kicks off today.
Yep.
Dating this episode.
Yes, I saw that. No, good news. You know what? You guys are on the tail end of that cold, chilly weather, and it's going to be beautiful soon. I remember this time of year. So stay warm, and I'll send some warm vibes your way, too.
Awesome.
But yes, thank you so much. It was really an honor to be on the show today.
Well, thank you. Appreciate that.
Appreciate it.
And thank all you guys for joining us on this episode of the Summits Podcast. From wherever you guys get your podcasts, or if you're tuning in on the Heroes Foundation YouTube channel, thank you for doing so. We greatly appreciate it. Don't forget, guys, beat cancer.